This is WHCC in Holland. It's time now for Talk the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our guest on Talk the Town this morning is Representative Joe Habman. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Juke. Glad to be here.
And he is going to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Lansing. And one of the things that I've been particularly interested in is the core curriculum that we've been talking about here and in Lansing. So where are we at on that? Go.
Well, let's start out with the right terminology.
Okay.
It is not core curriculum.
And okay.
It is Common Core.
Common Core.
And they sound very similar, but there's a big difference.
Yes.
Because a lot of people believe that it is going to be a core curriculum, and no matter where you are in the country, you'd be operating under the same curriculum.
And taking the same thing in school.
Yeah. It's not, and there's a slight distinction there. People are afraid that, what they may learn or the way they may learn it in California on perhaps a state or a part of the country
yeah.
that has more liberal standards on things like American history or evolution or a variety of things on the social side, that's what we would be learning here. And it's called Common Core because it's really set a base standard. And I just left some office hours at Russ's Easttown this morning. I had a couple of people from the ISD in talking about it. The Common Core really sets up a floor that if you are transferring around the country or around the state and you're going from 7th to 8th grade and you move here from California or somewhere else, that you have a certain learning level that you can enter our school systems, no matter what district it is,
mm-hmm.
and you've reached a certain level. And the eighth grade math in California means the same as eighth grade math in Michigan. So it's a base. Now, our school boards will still have, our state school board will still look at the curriculum. They will look at the standard, and they will decide whether Michigan has to exceed that. And in our local school boards, it does not take authority away from them. It's still, we still have local control,
mm-hmm.
but it does set that floor. That we can exceed, but we can't go below. And I think we need to start accelerating our standards in school. We need to set a base standard. And I'm supportive of it. I'm glad we took the summer. I was a little frustrated the way it got thrown into the budget cycle, and the budget was held hostage over it. But at the end of the day, we've had a committee meeting all summer on it. To flesh out the details of it, to make sure that it is the right thing to do, and maybe that's for the best. So I anticipate it will be coming back to us in the next 2 weeks or so for a final vote. I anticipate it will pass, and I don't think it's the big boogeyman that some people have made it out to be. I think it's probably a good thing for our education system.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess, and maybe I was wrong, but I thought everything would come from the Department of Education in Washington.
No. And actually, it's not the federal government that started this at all. It's not the Department of Education. It was a group of the Governors Association that started it, that realized that we can't have this disjointed education system
mm-hmm.
between states. So it did not come out of the Department of Education. That's another misconception. It came out of the Governors Association. And governors naturally want to make sure they maintain some control for
right.
their states, but they realize that we're a much more transit society than we were 60 years ago, and people are constantly on the move. They're changing schools more frequently, and we need a standard. So I'm anxious to hear people's input, but that's where the way I've had it explained to me from everything that I've learned about it, I think it is the right thing to do. It raises the bar. It doesn't lower the bar. So I think that's the fundamental disagreement we have, is some people see it as, well, the federal government is doing top-down education from the Department of Education,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to set this general curriculum, and our kids are going to learn something that we don't believe in. I don't believe that's the case. I believe it is a standard set at the minimum that we can exceed. And hopefully our schools are better than the rest of the country, and we do make them more stringent, higher standards. I believe West Michigan has some of the best schools around, and we should set that floor but then try to exceed.
course, we have more schools of choice in this area than
we do
a lot of places.
Yeah, so we've created that competitive atmosphere within our school system. If parents believe that their kids can get a better education somewhere else, they have that school of choice option. And I believe competition raises the bar for everyone as well.
And if mothers don't mind staying home, they can teach at home.
If they can at least get their kids ready for school before they start kindergarten, being ready to learn,
yes,
that's a step in the right direction. And that's one thing I hear from schools so often is that parents aren't preparing their kids for school. They rely on the school to do everything, and instead of partnering with the school saying, my child's going to be ready when they hit kindergarten and every day and through K through 12, my child's going to be ready for school. They're going to be well-fed. They're going to be doing their homework. They're going to be read to. They're going to be prepared, and they're going to get a good night's sleep, and they're going to be prepared. Partnering with those teachers, I think, is the best way to make sure that your child receives a good education.
Well, your mother probably read to you before you went to school, as mine did to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I could almost read when I went to school.
Well, and that's so important. I mean, being able to recognize the alphabet,
right,
knowing what the alphabet is, getting into the habit of reading, I think is just so important. And being able to see your parents read the way I did was important to my education.
Right. All right. All right. Our number here is 395-1450. If you'd like to talk to Joe this morning, our line is open for you. And we have a few other things we can talk about this morning, and about the Medicaid.
Well, boy, the two big issues that have dominated the summer have been Common Core, but then also the Medicaid vote that happened on Tuesday. You know, there again, the House voted it out in June. The Senate did not vote it out. They decided to back up and take the summer to look at it. They finally did vote it out on a very close vote on Tuesday.
Yes, it was.
But there again, they did their due diligence. They improved on it, they believe. They put in some additional parameters to it that we're going to hear about next week, how they improved it on it. But we're going to move forward with it. And we've got a program that we are sending millions, really billions of dollars, to the federal government. We have the law of the land, something that I do not approve of. And, I take some criticism that I'm supporting Obamacare. I look at it as the fact that Obamacare is here for now. I don't believe it's sustainable. But while it's here, we have to put Michigan in the best position possible,
right,
to get our tax dollars back from Washington and to serve as many people in this state as we can. Now, by saying no to Medicaid expansion, to the Healthy Michigan program and the additional requirements that we put into it to improve Medicaid, if I said no to that, I'd be saying, Washington, just take our tax dollars. Take them from our individuals and from our businesses. Take all of our tax dollars and don't give it back to us. Just divide it up among the states that have decided to participate.
Yeah.
And they can spend our money. And also, there's 400,000 people that I frankly don't care whether they have insurance or not.
Yeah.
And I think that approach is wrong. As I said, long-term, I don't think Obamacare is sustainable. And I think with the next president and the next Congress, we might see, hopefully, we're going to have to see some changes.
Right.
But it puts Michigan in the best position that when Obamacare fails, if it fails, Michigan will be in the best position to pick up the pieces and do what's right for Michigan residents. And at the end of the day, that's my first goal, is to make sure that Michigan residents are taken care of the best they can.
Okay. Time out for a word here, and we'll be right back with your representative if you have a question.
WHCC Morning Show, and on your drive home with Diane Costin and the Daily Recap, weekdays from 5 till 6 p.m. on 1450 WHCC, Holland's hometown station.
All right, we're here with your representative, Joe Hoffman, and if you have a question, and we do have a call coming in right now, so let's take that call. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Morning. I love Duke Benos for president.
I'm too old. Thank you. I don't think that'll happen. There would have to be some fast changes. All right. We had some other things we want to talk about as well. You had some things on your agenda there, Joe.
The one
big thing that happened this week in my life is we had a hearing with the Criminal Justice Committee. I've got a set of bills with a couple of my colleagues called Juvenile Life Without Parole. Now, this gets a little complicated for a radio show, maybe, but the Supreme Court about a year ago ruled that Michigan and all states could not have a juvenile life without the opportunity of parole.
Mm-hmm.
That means for kids 17 and younger that had committed, were involved in a murder, involved in a crime that where a life was lost, you can still have juvenile life, but you can't have a blanket policy across the board that says all kids will not have the opportunity of parole.
Let's take a moment for this call. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, you're talking about youngsters getting ready for school. I have a little great-granddaughter. I asked her, she's going to be going to Young Five, if she was ready. I says, can you count? Yeah. Do you know your numbers? Yeah. Do you know your letters? Yeah. And I said, well, can you read? Yeah. She says, I don't even need the book.
That's
very good. All right. Thank you for sharing that.
that is funny. Juvenile life without parole. We had a hearing this week to try to start a process that we can codify, put into statute, to bring Michigan into compliance with what the Supreme Court
mm-hmm.
said. We have 363 people in our correction system that are life sentences, and they went in when they were 17 years or younger. In my mind, those people deserve a second look, and I'm confident that two-thirds, three-quarters of them will still stay behind bars. But there are a category of people that committed a crime when they were young, and they were not the primary perpetrator of the crime. They were along for the ride. There are extenuating circumstances that maybe they should have a second look. I don't see the value in keeping people behind bars for life if they were not truly the ones that committed the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, the person that was not the person, the one that committed the crime, got a worse plea bargain or a worse sentence than a person that plea bargained his way out of it. So the person that pulled the trigger maybe is already out on the street, but the person who drove the car is behind bars for life. There are cases like that. And I think we are getting to, a common agreement. I've got one or two departments in the state that are just adamantly opposed to this of any compromise, but I'm going to keep fighting for a handful of people that I believe we need to find some redemption.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find a second chance for some of these people. I know there are cases out there. So it was a very long hearing on Tuesday. We went from 9 o'clock till noon. We went from 1:30 in the afternoon to 5:30 at night. Continuing to hear testimony from those that have lost loved ones to a murder and to those that have a loved one in prison who went there at a very young age. And
I was going to say, did you hear from any parents?
Absolutely.
These parents, young people.
Parents with pictures and very sad stories, and my heart goes out to people like that. Fortunately, nothing like that has ever happened in my family, and I don't know anybody who's directly involved. So it's hard to relate to their kind of agony and their kind of pain. But I've met enough of these people on the inside of prisons to know that every story isn't the same. And that's what the Supreme Court has said, is that every story is not the same. And you've got to look at a difference
mm-hmm.
between, you can, as I said, a judge can still sentence somebody to life without parole, even as a juvenile. But they can't have a blanket policy that says everyone is the same, and you've got to look at mitigating circumstances and aggravating circumstances in establishing that sentence. We need to establish that going forward. I believe we need to establish that for the 363 men and women that are in our prisons and have committed crime in the past.
And it'd be good for our prison system, too.
I think it would be.
Yeah. All right, we've got another call here, I do believe. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, good morning. You were just talking about this law, and I have an ex-son-in-law right now, but he was in for 28 years of his life. He just got out last year, and he is functioning pretty well. He's had a lot of support, which is sometimes doesn't happen. But anyway, and I had a son in prison. That's how I met him. And my son is doing well, thank God. But, yeah, this juvenile thing, it is such a sad thing because you see so many. Actually, I have a granddaughter, and it just seems like it's going to generation to generation. And she's sitting in Idle County Jail right now. And, yeah, it hurts me. But my family is saying, hey, let her rot. Who cares? But me, as a born-again Christian, I care. And my children are giving me a hard time with this. But I think, like you said, hey, she stole. Yeah, it's wrong. And she's paying the price right now. But I really feel if someone doesn't stand up and try and help these, they're just going to go by the wayside. And I don't think the jail, and no disrespect, they do what they have to do also. But I definitely feel that we as citizens, and as we call ourselves born-again Christians, we do have to give people. We have to forgive. Because God's not going to forgive us if we don't. So that's just a comment I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, I couldn't have said it better.
Okay.
thank you so much for that call. And you're absolutely right. I firmly believe there's a place for justice and redemption and mercy all in one. And we need to do a better job of taking care of people and not letting them rot, not forgetting about them. So thank you very much.
They wouldn't just leave the system, actually, would they?
Oh,
when they get out, they would have some guidance and...
Well, as I said, this is no guarantee that any of these people would get out.
Right.
All I'm trying to do is say that the judicial system needs to set up a system to look at those sentences again and decide who should stay and who, if there's any, who should have the potential for a second chance.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, good morning. I, too, appreciate that last caller, and I appreciate Joe having an open mind on this issue. I think he does a good job of looking at the issue and trying to come up with using his expertise in a positive way, and I appreciate that. And I just heard on the radio last night a story about how many people we have in our prison systems that are innocent, that are serving life terms. There's thousands. And I just think that's another issue that indicates we're not always right, and we need to constantly come up with ways to do the right thing. So thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Really appreciate that.
All right. 395-1450 is our number here. If you'd like to talk to Joe this morning, we'd be happy to hear from you. And let's take a look at our weather while we have a moment. The weather is brought to you by the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. Come in for lunch and pick a pair. And the weather outlook is for... sunny and blustery today with increasing cloudiness and afternoon thunder showers possible, winds gusting to 24 and a high of 87. And then for tonight, 50% chance of showers with a low near 66. Rain showers Saturday early, gradually becoming sunny with a high of 82. And right now we're looking at 68 degrees and the... I don't have the beach water, but we will have that a little later. But I think if it's going to be windy, you don't have to worry about the beach today. It'll be a red flag. Good morning. You're online with Joe.
Good morning, Juke, and good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
You're talking about, you know, our youth and some of the issues we have with, you know, basically incarceration with them and the penalties of, you know, what they do and how long we should give them or deal with that. Is there a way we could possibly look into a boot camp training or an environment such as that? Because, you know, looking at the family values that these kids come out of, a lot of it has to deal with that, and getting them out of their environment can help when you take a youth out of a troubled environment, put them into a better environment, and teach them new ways, manners, and skills. They do end up, you know, creating a better lifestyle later. You know, with boot camps and training and better education through a jail system environment might help. Is there anything we can do like that here in Michigan to push our teens or, you know, young adults into something like that?
Yes, thank you for that. We do have one correctional facility in Michigan that concentrates on that intensive programming. It's in Chelsea, Michigan, and it's primarily meant for parolees and probationers that, you know, really they have to want it. And they go into that system, and it feels more like a military base than it does a prison. I visited it a couple of years ago, It's a little more expensive than our correction system, a typical prison. But the recidivism rate, which is the base measurement of how many people go back in, it does produce a better product when young people are there. So we do a little bit of that, but you and the past caller just hit on something. When she talked about it being generational, that's an important distinction there. She said she had a granddaughter, a son, a son-in-law, and a granddaughter in prison, prison or jail. So often, these problems come out of the home in one way or another, that a child sees what their father has done, and it becomes acceptable, maybe not desirable, but acceptable that, spending some time in jail isn't out of the norm. And that we have to break that idea. We have to break that paradigm for kids that this is something that is acceptable. If you had a parent in prison, you are, I think, three times more likely to go to prison yourself. And you're absolutely right. We need to start dealing with these things at a very young age. It starts in our education system. It starts in the home to train up a child that's not an acceptable choice. And the behaviors that lead to a jail or a prison are not an acceptable choice. The best thing we can do is start to train our kids at a young age that it's not beyond even the realm of possibility that they would ever have to go to jail. So thank you for that. And, we do have one boot camp in Michigan, and maybe it's time for a few more.
Okay. Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yeah, Joe, I think talking about the Medicaid.
Yes, sir.
I think the perception with people out there is that we're getting our money back, some of it. So it's not just more big government. It's we're getting some of the tax dollars that we send there.
Well,
and I think that's the perception that people think that's what's happening, and I don't think that's the case. We're getting some of our tax dollars back, which is a good thing.
Well,
that's
been
my
one
comment.
Of my,
thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And that's been one of my points, is that whether we accept Medicaid expansion or not, whether we participate, we are still going to pay these tax dollars. Now, I know the other side says, hey, we're $17 trillion in debt in this country, and we should be putting the kibosh on the whole Obamacare program. I don't disagree, but that's not going to happen. And these dollars are going to go from Michigan to Washington, D.C., and while that program is in place, my job is to do what's best for Michigan residents and getting some of those tax dollars back to Michigan.
And
so,
another
thank
call.
You, caller.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yes, good morning, Joe and Duke. I would just like to mention a program that is based in Grand Rapids. It's called Crossroad Bible Institute.
Sure, I'm very familiar.
And that is
with
such
it.
A wonderful organization for inmates to get involved in. They have a Bible study they go through, and there are inmates that come out of there and say, this is the best thing that happened to me, and I wouldn't have been the person I am now if it wasn't for them. So I think I would like to say that it's changed many lives. So that's my opinion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have there's the more I'm involved in this, the more I realize how many programs are out there that go into our prison system. Most recently, up in Muskegon, Prison Fellowship went in with a full-blown program for about 130 prisoners. They've always been up in Muskegon with what's called the Toomey Project, which is like a mini seminary, the Urban Ministry Initiative. That's a great program. So there's some good things happening in our prisons. It's a shame that we wait for somebody to go to prison before we do it. And, I've heard this said, and I've said it before, is, years ago we kicked God out of our schools, and now we ask him to come back into our prisons. Well, maybe we have that a little backwards.
Okay, let's take this call. Yes, you're on the line with Joe.
Well, good morning, Duke. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask Mr. Hoffman how long-term the federal government has committed to sending those tax dollars back to Michigan, and what's Michigan going to do when the federal government no longer sends those tax dollars back. I don't have any confidence whatsoever in Common Core or this Medicare expansion, and we need some leadership. We don't need some of the politicians that seem to be in office now. Where is Michigan going to come up with the money for these additional Medicare recipients when the federal government no longer sends it over here?
Well, that's a great question. And we put in the legislation that
when the federal government no longer sends it over here.
Okay.
Well, that's a great question.
Great question. I'll try again. In the legislation, it clearly states that if we're going to accept this, we're going to do it under Michigan terms, not the federal government's terms. And we have to go to the federal government. We have to get waivers on some of the statutes that, and they have to approve that, or we're not going to take it. And it's our game. It's not theirs. So if they don't want to play by our rules, we're not going to expand. And when the money drops down below 100%, it clearly states in the statute that we're out. So if the federal government wants to pay 100%, we're fine. We'll be in the program. When it drops down below that, the existing program will cease to exist. That'll probably be over about a three-year period. If the federal government extends it at 100%, I would likely say that we'll continue to participate. If it drops below 100%, the state legislature would have to revisit it. They can reauthorize it at 95 or 90%. That is what we anticipate. But we're going back to the federal government and saying it's 100% or nothing. So, great question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't have another call coming in at the moment. So, anything else you wanted to add today?
$100 million coming from into Michigan for demolition in distressed cities. That's a good thing. Most $52 million of it is going to be spent in Detroit.
Detroit, right.
Locally, I believe some of that money is going into Muskegon to start getting rid of abandoned houses that have been torn down. Most of the money will be on the east side of the state. I wish we didn't have the need here in West Michigan,
yeah.
But we do in Muskegon. So there will be additional money spent to get rid of the blight in some of the neighborhoods, and we're trying to build those cities back.
It'd be nice to see Detroit building back too again.
It certainly would.
And we're out of time, Joe. We thank you so much for being our guest this morning here on our Talk of the Town program.
Thank you, Duke.
And giving a lot of the answers that we hope people are happy with, okay?
Great to be here.